Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Moments away, Kelly Orzel. But first, you got Japanese beetles flying around your yard. Rescue has a trap that will help prevent the damage to your plants.
Japanese beetle traps, when used properly, draw beetles away from your plants and trees. The trick is to hang them 30 feet from plants you want to protect. That way you lure beetles away from the areas where they cause damage and trap them. Rescue Japanese beetle traps are the only traps with a controlled release lure that lasts the entire beetle season. Their extra large bags is welded directly to the trap, stays put even when it's full of beetles. And the Rescue Japanese Beetle Trap is the only trap with a reusable bag that opens and closes at the bottom. If beetle season is a bad one, you just open, empty the bag, and keep trapping the beetles with the same trap. You can find all this information at rescue.com, and their products are made in the USA. That's rescue.com.
Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Kelly Orzel is a small-scale herb farmer, author, speaker, and grows in coastal Maine. Her book is The Backyard Gardener. Welcome to the program, Kelly.
Hi, thank you.
Well, we want to thank you for taking time out of your day, not only to enlighten Holly and myself, but all of our listeners. And I'll start with this. You love mulch just about as much as we love mulch. What is your favorite mulch? And then also, what mulches should vegetable gardeners be avoiding?
Oh, I do love me some mulch. My number one go-to organic mulch is seaweed. I'm very lucky. I live on the coast, so I can go and get some. And one of the best things is it's free. It does everything a good mulch should do. It suppresses weeds, keeps the roots cool, builds up the soil structure and all that, but it does some other things. It has additional plant growth hormones and regulators. It has small amounts of readily available minerals and nutrition that plants necessarily need. It stimulates soil life, bacteria, microbes that live in our soil, and it also has an added benefit. It repels slugs and snails, because when they take their little squishy bodies and they rub themselves along the crinkly, salty seaweed, it will actually burn them, so it'll keep them off your plants, which I think is a great bonus.
Well, with that being said, number one, you said it was free, so it's not one of these things that it works great, but I got to go get it in the cover of night. And
yeah, well, you don't have to, as long as it's not in the water, okay. It's not considered living, it's not considered part of the ocean ecosystem, so as long as it's dry and up on the sand, you can go and get as much as you want. I go with my little pitchfork and, Rubbermaid tubs and stock up, but if you don't have seaweed, I love straw for an organic mulch as well. I use a lot of that, like if there's just not as much seaweed available, and for inorganic, I love using landscape fabric. It's a woven polypropylene Sunbelt landscape fabric, and I use that on my farm a lot, especially for scaling crops up when I need to cover a lot of space.
Yeah, we've got a lot of listeners up in the Boston area on WCRN 830 AM. And when you apply the seaweed, are we grinding up? Are we just laying it on the ground? And secondly, do you need to be concerned with the salt affecting the soil?
No, I used to be concerned about the salt in the soil, and then at the Coastal Maine Botanical Garden, they had this guy, I forget his first name, but his last name is McNichols, and he was like their mulch guru, and we had a whole big talk, and he said, don't worry about it. The first time I was nervous, but after I did it 1 year, it was no problem. You just take the seaweed as is. You can pull it apart so that way it kind of molds, to the shape of the bed and the height that you need, and you just lay it down there, and I put it over my irrigation, obviously. And then, the rainwater, whatever salt goes in, it's so minuscule, it's not going to affect it. The only thing I do is if I'm going to take the mulch off at the end of the season and put it in the compost bin, I will rinse it off because I don't want the salt affecting the compost and the microbial activity. But other than that, just put it on and let it decompose, and all that good stuff that's in the seaweed, all that marine life and all those minerals will actually go into your soil. So it's another, I like it because it also builds your soil naturally.
That's very interesting. We live right by Lake Michigan, and now you got me thinking about some of that vegetation that comes back up onto the shore. So as an herb farmer, what are your best tips for those who have issues growing herbs, especially rosemary and lavender? How can people stay motivated?
Well, first, I think the first thing you got to do is make sure you select the right variety for your climate. As a cold climate gardener, growing Mediterranean herbs can be a bit of a challenge. So you want to pick making sure you pick cold tolerant varieties and also varieties that will work for you. And you want to be realistic about your expectations. So like rosemary is just not going to overwinter in zone 3 no matter how much mulch you put around it. But you can bring it in to overwinter it. But if you choose cold tolerant varieties and you use some season extension, I've been able to grow fresh rosemary and lavender up through Christmas, which is great for all those Christmas turkeys and having that fresh aroma. For rosemary, some of my favorite cold tolerant varieties are Gorizia, has these huge leaves, incredibly high oil content. Tuscan Blue is another really flavorful one. Blue Spire and Spice Island. It's just great. And also with rosemary and lavender, when you harvest, you want to make sure you never cut into the old wood because it will not regrow from there. So when you're harvesting, throughout the season, you always want to make sure that you're only cutting into the green because then it's always going to reshoot from those locations. And with lavender, the first thing you want to do in its first year is never let it bloom. If you see flowers, cut them off immediately because you want to let all that energy go back into plant establishment. And another big thing with lavender is, especially in cold climates, it will require some overwintering, but it has a really good perennial life. I use like straw and I mulch around it, and then I cover it with a row cover and use either T-posts or like big rocks to weight it down. And what that does is it really prevents the cold winter winds from drying out the rosemary, the lavender. Everyone for some reason always thinks that it's the water and the wet and the cold snow that kills the lavender. It's really the drying winds that do that. So by insulating it with some mulch and covering it with the row cover, it's going to eliminate that. And again, variety is so important for culinary in the cold areas. I would suggest Hydecote, Munstead, Jean Davis is a beautiful pale pink. Those are all English hardy. They're usually smaller. They're about 18 to 24 inches, so they're smaller, but those are the culinary ones and really hardy. The other type of lavender, which is the lavender you think of when you go to France, is those big, fluffy, clouds of purple, is the lavendins. And it's essentially it's a hybrid between the English and the French. And they're larger in shape. They have much stronger scents. And so if you're looking for lavender for craft projects or essential oils or making hydrosols, they're going to be your better bet. And my favorite varieties for them, cold-wise, so they're really tolerant, is Provence, Grosso, and then Grosso Alba, which is a white. And they all get about 3 feet with a piece. So they're just these huge, incredible plants, but they just, that winter protection and, avoiding that bloom in that first year are the key. And just remember, do not cut into the old wood. Otherwise, you're going to be surprised that there's no more plant left.
Right. And whenever you overwinter them using that row cover, you're preventing the row cover from compacting on top of the plant, correct? Or you're trying to keep it upright? Or is it okay to get a little compaction?
It's okay to get a little compaction. It's more so, the row cover I find is more so to keep the straw in place, because without that, unless you have a immediate snow, the mulch can be blown away. So it does a little bit of insulation, but it's really there mostly to kind of keep everything contained and kind of create this little nest around the lavender.
Great. Thank you. So we are talking with Kelly Orzel. She's a small-scale herb farmer and also an author of The Backyard Garden. So your book, The Backyard Gardener, please tell us more about it and maybe an interesting tip or something to encourage our listeners to check it out.
Sure. I wrote it as a holistic approach to the vegetable garden because that's how I grow. I grow everything organically, and I have a whole chapter just on organic techniques that I use on my farm that I also use in my personal gardens. And I have a lot of information about season extension. That's one of the biggest things I tell people is that, if you can just combine two or more techniques, it's like moving your whole garden two zones south. So that increases your growing time for 4 to 6 weeks on either end. And when I say combining two techniques, an example of that would be using row covers in a hoop house. So that's two different types, and you're going to get that season extension on either end of the season. You could also use raised beds inside a hoop house, or raised beds with row covers, or a cold frame with row covers. All of those things will just kind of greatly increase your production season, which I think is just huge. And also, there's in the back of the book, I do a monthly garden chore chart for new gardeners, because I found that when I first started gardening, it was so hard to know, when do I do this? When should I be doing this? So it's just kind of a little helpful tip to help people get started.
Now, you encourage everyone to grow comfrey. Why?
Yes.
Why grow comfrey? Because I know this kind of a comfrey is kind of a thing in the UK and the allotments, but why? What's your example, why do we want to do this?
Sure. I don't understand why in America comfrey gets such a bad rap. I think comfrey is amazing. I was gifted some probably about 8 years ago, and it was like the biggest eye-opening gift I ever got. So the only thing I will say, I got what's called true comfrey, and that does grow legs and will spread easily. So if you let that go to flower, you will get more. So I always suggest for people who are starting out to grow the Russian comfrey, which is a sterile variety, so it won't set seed and grow legs on you. If you're looking for it, look for the Bocking 14 cultivar, B-O-C-K-I-N-G, and the number 14. And what I love about comfrey, it's full of nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus, but it's really just chock full. It has a good amount of nitrogen, but it's really high in potassium, and it has these deep roots that goes deep through your soil and pulls all that nutrients to the surface, and it's stored in their leaves. So what you can do is, my favorite thing is, I chop that thing to the ground multiple times a season, and I chop everything up, and I make comfrey tea, which is super simple. You just put like a big, like a 5-gallon bucket from like, you know, one of the big box stores. I fill it with the chopped comfrey leaves and stems, and then I fill it with water, use a brick to weight it down, and cover it up and leave it in the sun for about 3 weeks. And it will smell pretty rank when you open it up, but it is just chock full of nutrient goodness for any kind of flowering plant. So particularly vegetables that will flower and fruit, like your tomatoes, your cucumbers, your squashes, your peppers, all that kind of good stuff. So whenever I see those plants starting to flower, I will pour a dilute. I usually use a 10% of the tea with 90% water. Some people do it directly on, and I've tried it, and it doesn't hurt the plant. But I always just tend to, I want to make it go as far as I can. So I make the comfrey tea, and it really helps with disease resistance, overall plant health, but it really helps with fruit and flower production. So that's one way I use it. I also use it as a compost accelerator, so it activates the soil microbes. So again, I chop it up, and then I layer it within my compost pile, and it just kind of helps speed up and kind of encourage all that microbial activity, which creates all that delicious, good organic matter. And thirdly, you can also use it as a nutrient-rich mulch. I think of it as like chop and drop. So you chop up the leaves, flowers, and stems. Again, only flowers if you are using the sterile Russian comfrey. Do not do that if you're using the old true comfrey. But and then I pull the mulch away from my plants, and I drop the chopped up comfrey, and then I'll put the mulch back against the plants. And what happens is it decomposes really quickly and allows all that nutrients back into the ground right at the plant. So it's like a side dressing, but just chock full of goodness.
And your comfrey, I'm assuming people could grow it in a container, but it's best to be put in the ground and just leave it there for years and years.
Yeah, because and that part of how it gets the potassium and the nitrogen and phosphorus is by this really deep root system, and that's one of the reasons people who do grow it, for some reason, if they're unaware of how to care for the plant, they let it go to flower, and then they try to get rid of it, and it's very hard because it has such a deep root system. People will like chop it and be like, it keeps coming back. So as long as you continue, you can use the true comfrey as long as you chop it before. it goes to flower. You can be ruthless, cut all the way to the ground, use all of the plant, and it, you know, you can use it in so many places. I never have excess. I'm always running out and needing to make more. And just as a little tip when handling it, some people get a rash from the leaves. I haven't, but some people do. So if you've never done it before, wear gloves the first time because it has like these little bristles on it. But there's just so many great ways to use it to make your garden better. I just can't say enough good things about it.
I can tell you're definitely passionate about it, and we really appreciate the information you've brought to us today. How can people find out more about you?
They can go to my website, kellyorzel.com, KellyOrzel.com, and they can also follow me on Instagram, and my handle is Bowery Beach Farm, and I'll be there, and I share kind of what's going on in my gardens.
Well, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered Holly, myself, and all of our listeners, not only educating us, but everyone around. We thank you for that.
Oh, thank you.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.